Dr. Green crossed to the little chair by the window where I like to sit when the weather is a little warmer. Otherwise, there is a chill that seems to penetrate the window glass. Below the window there is the yard, the high wall, and the endless fields. Roscommon Town, I am told, is over the horizon, and it may be. There is a river that moves between the fields that in the summer takes the light and uses my window as a signal, signalling to what or who or where, I do not know. The river light plays in the glass, so naturally I like to sit there. At any rate, Dr. Green put his weight into it, always a cause for slight alarm, for it is a mere dress chair, one of those nice little chairs that country women like to have in their bedrooms for their dress, even if it was the only nice object in the house. How it got to this room, God only knows, and he, perhaps, hardly. Can you remember, Mrs. McNulty, what it was, I mean, the events leading up to your presence in the Sligo Asylum? You remember me saying I could find no proper record of the matter. I have searched again since, and certainly have found nothing further. I'm afraid the history of your presence here and in Sligo is no more. But I will continue to look, and I have sent to Sligo just on the off chance they have something. Can you remember anything about the matter? I don't think I remember. The Leitrim Hotel, they called it. I do remember that. What? They called the asylum in Sligo the Leitrim Hotel. Did they? I never knew that. Why so? Oh, he said, nearly laughing. Nearly, because, yes, half of Leitrim was said to be in it. Poor Leitrim. Yes. That is an odd word, Leitrim. I wonder what it means. I suppose it is Irish. Of course it is. I smiled at him. He was like a boy that has banged his knee and now the pain was subsiding, the cheerfulness of a boy after pain and tears. Then he sank back again somehow, blackening deeper into himself like a mole in the earth. I answered him largely to raise him back up again. I do remember terrible dark things and loss and noise, but it is like one of those terrible dark pictures that hang in churches. God knows why, because you cannot see a thing in them. Mrs. McNulty, that is a beautiful description of traumatic memory. Is it? Yes, it is. Then he sat there in his own version of silence for a long while. He sat so long, he was almost an inmate of the room. As if he lived there himself, as if he had nowhere to go to, nothing to do, no one to attend. He sat in the chill light, the river, drowned in its own water, and drowned a second time in the rains of January, was not in a position to throw its light. The window glass was severely itself. Only the still grass of winter far below lent it a slight besmirch of green. His eyes, now much clearer somehow and more distinct without the beard, were looking forwards as if at an object about a yard away, that stare that faces have in portraits. I sat on the bed and without the slightest embarrassment watched him, because he wasn't watching me at all. He was looking into that strange place, the middle distance, the most mysterious, human and rich of all distances, and from his eyes came slowly tears, immaculate human tears, before the world touches them, river, window and eyes. What is the matter, Dr. Green? I said. Oh, he said. I rose and moved towards him. You would have done the same yourself. It is an ancient matter. Something propels you towards sudden grief, or perhaps also sometimes repels. You move away. I move towards it. I couldn't help it. Please do not mind me if I stand near you, I said. I have had my bath yesterday. I am not foul-smelling. What? He said, absolutely surprised, but minutely. What? I stood by him and held out my right hand and placed it on his shoulder, actually a little behind the shoulder, on his back. I had this unbidden memory of my father sitting on his bed, holding my mother and patting her back almost childishly. I didn't dare pat Dr. Green, but just rested my old hand there. What is the matter? I said. Oh, he said. Oh, my wife has died.